So, in my last talk, I talked about the difference between the traditional view of delusion and enlightenment and the Soto Zen view. So I'm going to briefly summarize that. So the traditional view is that we start off as deluded, and through our meditation practice, traveling on this path, at some point, we attain enlightenment. Whoa! We let go of a small little self and feel joined to all life. That's beautiful and wonderful. However, that's a little dualistic. And in Soto Zen, which was founded by this guy named Dogen in the 13th century, he said, well, yes, this, the traditional Buddhist practice, meditation in order to move toward enlightenment and get enlightenment, but for him and for his disciples, and I happen to be one of his disciples, formally or informally, I guess I'm a formal disciple of his, practice enlightenment is one verb, practice enlightenment. Not practice in order to get enlightened. Practice enlightenment. And any time that I completely give myself to my sitting, that's practice enlightenment. Any time I completely give myself to washing the dishes, that's a practice enlightenment. Any time I completely give myself to just walking up the stairs, after I give my talk, just being there, just walking up the stairs, just there. If I'm not caught by before and after, that's practice enlightenment. So, and so that those are the two different points of view. And since I'm a Soto Zen guy, I'm going to talk tonight more about suggestions for practice enlightenment, not practice in order to, but practice enlightenment, which can only happen now. Enlightenment, whether it's practice enlightenment or enlightenment later on, is about happiness, about living with, feeling happy in your heart of hearts, And according to our teaching, that can't happen later on. That can only happen now. Real happiness can only be now. Whether it's my happiness walking up the stairs after the talk or walking into this room and seeing it half empty, but it's half full. I'm happy. It can only happen now. Research on happiness suggests that genetics and life circumstances make up 50% of people's happiness. The other 50% is the product of our habits and our outlook on life. And I would add our meditation, because that's one of our habits here. You either create happiness or we don't. So, if practice enlightenment, when we give ourselves to whatever activity we're doing, we get back immediately. We feel connected. We feel joined immediately. Whether it's to our feet as we're walking up the stairs, or to the sky as we're looking at it, or to the dishwater as we're washing the dishes, and we see the whole world there in the dishwater. Happiness. A series of nows, instead of before, being caught by before and after. That's where our happiness is. Not later on now, after you've done all these things you need to do. This now. But what about suffering then? What about suffering? Well, suffering, suffering sometimes comes in. So I have Lyme's disease, which goes in and out of remission. Luckily, it's been in remission a lot more than it's been out of remission. But it was out of remission for a month in November. And it means I was lying in my bed for a month. And lying in my bed, and after maybe the 20th 20th day, I don't know, 20th day, I thought, oh, maybe I'll never get better. And then fear came in. Oh, I won't get to see my grandkids. I care about you guys, but I care more about my grandkids. Won't get to see my grandkids. Oh. Well, maybe I'll be in a spirit form and I could still visit them, but I don't know. They won't see me. So fear comes in. So then I lie on my back in my bed. I put my hands in shashu. This is our walking meditation position. I just do that because it cues me. I do my breathing and I'm intimate with what is. I'm intimate with my suffering, with my fear. And there's a happiness in there. There's a happiness because I'm just here. I'm just here with it. I'm not struggling with it. I'm not wrestling with it. I'm not fighting with it. Just here. There's happiness. And then anytime we're completely present, there's happiness. But it's not my happiness. It's just the happiness of being. Practice enlightenment. We practice it. I practice it by lying on my back and putting my hands in this weird posture. This posture works for me because I've been doing this for 50 years. I suppose I could have done this posture, but if I had done this posture, I would have thought, oh, I've got to sit up, sit up straight. It's too weak to sit up straight. So this is the posture. So I'd like to give now 8 suggestions to happiness through practice enlightenment. And they're in the program. They're in the program. And I gave this talk on Sunday, and I was allotted 15 minutes to give it. So I just... But now I can... You guys are just sitting here. You're looking so calm and collected and like you've got all the time in the world. So I can just rattle on here. Rattle on. Number one, tip or suggestion for happiness through practice enlightenment. Because practice enlightenment, again, is happiness. It is happiness. Stop fretting about things that are beyond our control. Stop fretting. It's beyond my control that I have Lyme's disease. When it's in remission, it's in remission. When it's not in remission, it's not in remission. So there's a famous Zen story about a Zen teacher who was old and ill, and his disciple went to see him. He said, he noticed the teacher had been missing for morning meditation, which Zen teachers never miss. They never miss morning meditation. So he thought he wasn't there. He knew he was ill. He knew he was very ill because he hadn't been coming for 3 weeks and he never missed meditation. So he went to see him and he said, "How are you today? How are you today?" And the teacher said, "Sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha." Well, the sun-faced Buddha, according to Buddhist mythology, lives for on and on and on. The moon-faced Buddha lives for 24 hours. 24 hours. So we don't know how long we're going to be living. Is it for 24 hours? I'm almost 75. Am I going to live to be 101 or 75 and a half? Well, I don't know. Especially at my age, I don't know. I don't know. Sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha. We don't know. Happiness is just for being here, accepting that we don't know. We don't know, but we can be here. We can be here with each other, with ourselves. So stop fretting over things that are beyond your control. Cut it out, you guys. How long have you been doing this? Has it gotten you anywhere? Has it helped anyone? Cut it out. I'm going to be an old time Zen master. Cut it out. Stop. Sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha. Yeah, maybe 24 hours is all you've got. Practice enlightenment for those 24 hours. Pretty good. 24 hours is, if you really do it, is 24 centuries. Because it's not of time when we give ourselves to our experience. We give ourselves to to beings being present with whatever activity we're engaged in. It's not enough time. Number two, suggestion number two. Practice bare awareness of emotions. I talk about this a lot. Emotions can leave you and those around you damaged and unhappy. So we're just open to it. We don't get out of it. We're just open to it and let it pass through rather than trying to control it or give it a lot of fuel. We're just open to it and let it pass through. Sometimes it doesn't want to pass through. It just wants to stick around. And then we let it stick around. We let it stick around. It's not going to get us. It's just a coagulation of memories from the past that are welling up and making us worry about the future. Number three, practice a life of morality, or Shila, S-I-L-A in Sanskrit, morality. This is really simple. In Buddhism and Zen, it's really simple. It's not violating the core teaching that we're undivided from each other. And we're undivided from all of life. We're not divided. We're all in this together. All in this together. And if we act on that, if we feel that inside and act on it, then we're moral. We don't have to have a bunch of moral rules. Have the moral rules if they help. Sure. If they help you. But they're all based on interdependence, on the fact that we are joined at the hip with all life, joined at the shoulders with all life. When we act counter to this, we create feelings of regret, dissatisfaction, unhappiness. So know not when to go along with stuff that feels like you're violating this sense of interconnection. And when you feel like you're violating, come back to your moral compass, which is your sense of connectedness. It's not some rule, it's your sense of connectedness. Number four, daily physical activity. Daily physical activity. Important. Practice enlightenment. To really get practice enlightenment, you have to engage your body. Practice enlightenment, happiness happens in your body. It happens in your body, happiness. So you're doing daily physical activity. There's research that suggests that moving the body for as little as 10 minutes releases GABA, a soothing neurotransmitter that also limits impulsivity. So in Zen, going back to the 8th century, Zen practitioners have been doing manual labor every day. Every morning we clean here, you guys. You'd have to get up early to come join us. First we sit in meditation, and then we do walking meditation, then we do sitting meditation, then we do 10 minutes of cleaning every morning. And when I started my first Zen group in my hometown of Palo Alto, California, my teacher said he wanted to start a group down in Palo Alto. He would come from San Francisco. We did it in a graduate student's house. The house was pretty funky and it was pretty sloppy. But the graduate students were sleeping upstairs and we did meditation downstairs, and my teacher came from San Francisco to Palo Alto, my teacher Suzuki Roshi. So we'd do our meditation, do our sitting, our walking, our sitting, and I invited people to come, people who had never been, didn't know anything about meditation. And afterwards, although it wasn't on our calendar, Suzuki would roll up the sleeves of his robes and go in and start doing the dishes in the kitchen. And the expectation was that we would work with him, because the place was a pigsty. And so he would be practicing enlightenment with the dishes. And he looked really happy. He was having a great time. We were pissing and moaning in the corner. What does this have to do with meditation? So we said to him, we have to go to class. We have 8 o'clock classes. And he said, oh, I see. Well, then we'll just start earlier next time. We were already getting up at 5:45. And we're college students. It's better for me to stay up than to get up that early. Actually, my first year of meditation, since they started at 5:45 and I was on like a 1 a.m. schedule, I just stayed up. Crazy, I know. I did it. I drank a lot of caffeine in those days. So daily physical activity. Could be yoga, could be stretching, could be jogging, could be walking. Really important. And, you know, I think we're all doing better at that than we used to. But, you know, I notice sometimes I think I have a daily stretching routine and a daily exercise routine. Sometimes I think, well, I don't have time. I've got to get this done. I'm going to skip today. Not a good idea. This is your Dharma container. That's what we call this. That means this is where your happiness is. This is where your practice enlightenment is. Take care of this container. It contains wonder upon wonder of stillness and sense of connectedness. So you have to make that a priority. So I have to remind myself when I think, oh, I got to get this done. I don't have to get anything done. And I'll be much better at getting this done if I take care of my Dharma container. Number five, make your surroundings reflect your connectedness. Your connectedness, that's all. Make them reflect your sense of interconnectedness. Make them appealing. Make them calming. I had a counselor that I had come do counseling at my other nonprofit that I directed and come here, and she came here and came in the front door and worked with us upstairs, and then she came to my other nonprofit. She took me aside and she said, "Boy, Tim, the difference between these two places," she said, "you have got to do a better job at kind of taking care of your floors and your space and your general funkiness that people incorporate." That's where I used to work. She said, "At the Zen Center," she said, "as soon as I came in, I felt calm." She said, "I didn't even have a meditation practice, and I just felt calm." And I said, "And I looked at the floors and I saw how well taken care of, and I felt well taken care of." Then I went to your nonprofit and your other nonprofit, and she said, "I just felt like I felt nervous because there were papers all over the place and there were notices all on the bulletin boards and stuff, and it made me feel nervous." So important, right? Our environment, our physical environment, reflecting our sense of interconnectedness. Putting a picture of our family, a family member we love. If we love a family member, if not, a picture of our dog. Our dog who died, my dog Freckles, who died many years ago. I wish I had a picture of Freckles. I don't. I put Freckles on my altar next to Suzuki Roshi because, oh yes, my heart mind, you know, my calmness, my sense of connection, just as much with Freckles. More with Freckles and Suzuki Roshi than my parents and all those other people who died. Just the way it happens. Life is the way it is. Let's just take it as it is rather than shoot ourselves to death, right? I happen to have a wonderful relationship with Freckles, and she still supports me even though she's been dead for all these years. And it's not mystical. It's just what it is. It's my heart. Makes your surroundings reflect your interconnectedness with the things you really care about. If you feel that way about them and you interconnect with them, then your interconnectedness spreads out. It spreads out. So I have my altar upstairs. You know, I have a picture of my root teacher. Everybody said, "Suzuki, you need to have a picture of Katagiri in there. He is the founder." Well, my connection, my deep connection is not with Katagiri. It's with my root teacher. I have a picture of him. I have turtles on my altar because, as you guys know who hear me talk, turtles are my power animals. I have rocks on my altar, rocks that have called to me when I've been down by the lake. Just little ordinary rocks, but no, they're extraordinary. When I come into that room and I look at those rocks, they're extraordinarily alive. alive, the whole universe included in them. And a little Buddhas, I have a few little Buddhas on my altar. One tiny little Buddha sitting on a rock. That's the way I create that environment. So that I can sink into that stillness that's always here just when I walk in. And others can too. It's pretty cool. And then recently, someone gave me a snail that they made. A homemade snail. It's beautiful. So now it's my new object on the altar. I don't have much room for more things. I think I'm going to have to kick something off pretty soon. Maybe I'll have to have a second altar. And notice also how clutter affects your state of mind. If you have clutter externally, your mind gets cluttered. So just pay attention to that. Don't be rigid about this. This isn't a should. This is for your happiness, for your happiness, for the practice of enlightenment. That's what it's for. Number 6. Cultivate a flexible mindset, a growth mindset, and notice when you've got a fixed mindset and just sort of laugh and don't be hypnotized by your fixed mindset, right? As we get older, we develop more and more fixed mindsets. You believe who you are, and you don't want to change it. You can't change it. So now I'm almost 75. You know, if I have a fixed mindset about my age, then I get to think, maybe I can only, and maybe I'm starting to lose my memory. Well, I thought I was starting to lose my memory, and somebody reminded me that I had lost my memory when I was 20. So I said, oh yeah, I was absent-minded as a kid. Even my dog Freckles knew how absent-minded I was. So it has nothing to do with 75, but if I focus on this fixed mindset, I'm 75, I'm limited, I can't do this anymore, I can't teach the Dharma. I don't have to teach the Dharma. All I have to do is let the Dharma come out. If the Dharma wants to come out, woo, there's nothing coming out. I could be 85 or 95 or 105. Doesn't matter. The Dharma's here. Dharma loves to come out. Just a little nurturance and it comes out. A little TLC and it comes out all on its own. But it's fixed mindset. I'm getting old. Shriveling up. Well, I am shriveling up. I'm getting shorter. But I can just get shorter and shorter and still feel more connected as the shorter I get, the more, because I'm closer to the floor, closer to the animals, I'm closer to the plants, so shorter, shorter, shorter. Woo-hoo. So when something appears to be more than we can handle, we feel hopeless. We feel overwhelmed. We want to shut down. We want to develop a fixed mindset around that. Oh, I can't do that. Can't do that. Gotta hide. Gotta get inside. But with effort, with opening up our natural, flexible mindset, we can do almost anything. So I directed a very large nonprofit before I came here, and we got ready to do a capital campaign to raise $5 million. And my director of development said to me, we should ask Molly to be the chair of the capital campaign. And I said to Barbara, she's 85. And Barbara said, oh, that's ageist. She said, you have a fixed mindset. I thought you were a Zen teacher. She said, look at Molly. Look how vivacious she is, how well connected she is, how much energy she has. And I said, oh, okay. And Molly took on the campaign. She became the chair. She worked for 2 years. She brought in the $5 million. And by the end of that 2 years, she was younger, and she got younger and younger and younger. Because she was engaged. She was engaged in something she deeply cared about. She was doing practice enlightenment. She had something to do that really connected her with our mission, which was to help people who had mental health problems. She had mental mental health issues in her family. So she got younger inside. So with effort, we can do almost anything. And here's some research. Growth mindset, or flexible mindset. People who have those mindsets are happier because they're better at handling difficulties. They outperform those with a fixed mindset because they embrace challenges, treating them as opportunities to learn something new. So this relates to what I've also been talking about lately, brain plasticity. The brain gets hard, but through a flexible mindset, we create new neural pathways. The brain becomes more plastic. And so even though we get older inside, we're younger. But this is through our zazen. This is through our meditation and our practice enlightenment. If not, we do get more and more confined. And you know what old people are like? How they just got to have set ways of doing things, and they live mostly in the past and the future. And people get like that. But through practice enlightenment, it's the opposite. It's the opposite. The next suggestion is be generous. Not as a should. I should be generous. I want to be a good Buddhist or a good Catholic or not disappoint someone. Not as a should. The should, we get tangled up in our shoulds, but generous from your heart, your sense of connection with someone or something. Generosity. Generosity flows out when we feel connected. It just flows out. And it's reciprocal, so what we give, we get back immediately. Practice enlightenment only happens now through our generosity. As we give, we're getting it back. We're getting it back. And then we think, oh, I'm not doing it good enough. I should do it better. Well, okay, but breathe into that and don't get so hung up on that. Rather than you should do it better, how about just opening up to your... to what's happening now, that you feel you haven't been good enough, and then you can just feel all your dismay, your anger at yourself, and just be there with your open, spacious mind, and let it be there, let it do its dance. If it wants to stick around, let it just keep dancing. But maybe it'll just dance off stage. If it doesn't dance off stage, It's just a stage. Let it dance on stage. It doesn't need to dominate you. Just a TV program. Watching the same TV program over and over again. Watching those reruns. Rerun after rerun. Anybody ever experienced that? Anybody not experienced that? Be generous and include yourself. Please include yourself in your generosity. Don't leave yourself out. Don't you say you don't deserve it or you're not good enough. Oh, please, please. Generosity has to begin at home. Has to include you. Don't kick yourself out because you're bad. That's just all made up stuff that you're bad. You are what you are. Practice enlightenment now, 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 now. This is the last one. Number 8. Remind yourself that this activity is the best chance you have for intimacy and happiness. This activity, listening to me. At this moment, this activity is the best opportunity you have. And the best opportunity I have right now is to talk to you. Now, in 10 minutes, the best activity we have will be best opportunity we'll have will be to walk out of the room and then either have coffee or walk home. That would be the best opportunity. It's only in this activity, only in this activity, that we can know real intimacy. How can we know it anywhere else except in this activity? The mind has a tendency to magnify the past pleasure and past pain, right? Magnify past pleasure and past pain. Create a la-la land in the future or a scary future of demons. or met Borbol, so they're fighting against each other, right? Fighting. But only in the present can we experience deep joy. Practice enlightenment. We're lighter. We're lighter because we give ourselves to what is. We're lighter. We enlighten our delusion. We enlighten it. So in Western psychology, there is this phenomenon which you guys know about, most of you, called flow. Flow is a little bit like practice enlightenment, a little bit like it. And flow is defined as an engaged state of focus. Like practice enlightenment, completely engrossed, and then it says losing awareness of the passage of time and other external distractions. Pretty good. They're mostly very similar. But don't try to get into a flow state. Oh, later on, I'm going to try to get. No. Just be who you are. Just be with this activity. And that's your flow. That's your practice enlightenment. This activity. But you have to have a meditation practice to get a sense of what I'm talking about. But meditation isn't all of it. These suggestions are all things outside of your formal meditation practice. And outside of your formal meditation practice, the easiest way to do this is to begin working on things that you already love doing. Being with people that you already love being with. Doing things that you already love doing. Those things already you do practice enlightenment with. Already you have a sense of intimacy and connection with those. So why not start with those? Why not start close to home and just do more of those? Make a list of the things you really love, the people you really love, the activities you really love, a short list. And give yourself to those, and that's your practice enlightenment. And then move out, but move out gently and gradually, not some big should with some schedule and some program. We're always programming ourselves. All right, okay, I got to program myself too, because I can do bad things. But come on, not so much. Just like maybe 5%, 95%, just here. But just here doesn't mean not doing planning. You know, I always talk about just here, and the person says, well, I have to plan. Well, practice enlightenment planning then. Every morning when I was at People Incorporated, my first half hour or 45 minutes, I just planned. Just gave myself to it. Breathe. You can breathe while you're planning, you know. Just plan. Someone says that's not Zen. Well, then you have some idea of what Zen is. Zen's not something. Zen's the happiness from practice enlightenment in this moment, which doesn't kick out analysis and planning and all those things. It doesn't kick those out. We're thinking beings. We're planning beings. Important. So if we do this, if we just keep doing this, practice enlightenment, on and on, forever, sometimes falling down and not, I was so spaced out, I didn't even realize I finished the dishes, much less start them, because I was just thinking about my grandsons and how I'm going to be seeing them in a month. I'm already fantasizing about it, you know. Oh, then I fell down on that one. I was not really doing the dishes. But I was doing a kind of practice enlightenment because I was having a wonderful fantasy with my grandsons. Well, that could be practice enlightenment too. A wonderful fantasy where you feel connected with someone. So don't kick out your fantasy life. Fantasy life can be wonderful if it relates to your heart, if it relates to engagement with the things that you love. That's practice enlightenment too. Then when we do this, little by little, the small complaining self recedes and gets smaller. Still comes up, but it recedes. It no longer dominates. No longer just completely dominates. And at some point we feel intimate with everything and everyone. But we don't try to do that. We start at home by practicing intimacy with the things we deeply care about. So I'm going to end with this quote from the Dhammapada, early scripture, Buddhist scripture. If you speak or act with a heart mind that is calm and clear, happiness follows you like a shower that never leaves. If you speak or act with a heart mind that is calm and clear, happiness follows you like a shower that never leaves. So I managed to turn a 15-minute talk into a 40-minute talk. Boy, what a talkative Zen guy. I thought Zen guys are supposed to be quiet. Reflective. Supposed to. We always cling to supposed to. But we don't need so much supposed to. We don't need so much. It hampers us, our ability just to be with each other, just to be with ourselves, just to be with the world. So that's what I want to say for tonight. And I'll be glad to entertain any questions or comments, if anybody has any. Questions? Comments? Hey. Stories? Songs? Parables? slogans? Anybody have anything?
Well, I'm not sure. I'm still bouncing this around a bit in my head. So one of the things that you've said is that Zen is essentially a marriage between Buddhism and Taoism.
Yeah, yeah.
And it turns out the things that are said in the talks, it does seem like it leans towards Buddhism. Ah. That this was, but my impression is from what you were doing today was that it was more of a Taoist kind of, presenting.
Yeah, the teachers are different here, but I'm more of a Taoist. But don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody. Here I am, the guiding teacher here at the Minnesota Zen Meditation Center. But I'm more of a Taoist than a Buddhist. But those are just words. Those are just words, and I am a Buddhist too. My Buddhism is Taoist Buddhism, and the old Zen guys were like me, and my teacher Suzuki didn't talk much about Taoism, but he was so much a Taoist, a Buddhist Taoist, and I could give a whole talk on that. Well, I have given a whole talk on that, haven't I? We don't need so much about the labels: Christian, Buddhist, Taoist, Catholic. Just engage in your life. Just engage in your life. Don't worry so much about the labels. Try to be present. Try to be generous. And everything else falls into place. Just falls into place. Very simple. Too simple for most human beings. But as your mind gets more simple through your zazen, you're able to become more simple. More simple. Thank you. Anybody else?
I do. Tim?
Yeah.
This is a comment, Duncan, but maybe you'll comment on it.
Uh-huh.
I've tried to read Dogen.
You tried to read Dogen, yeah.
I've read... Yeah. Things that are translations of things that he said.
Yeah.
And so much of it I find so hard to understand.
Yeah.
And then you give a Dharma talk, and I can sit here and think, oh, I get it. And the contrast is, and I've seen this with a number of teachers.
Uh-huh.
Some... you listen to and you think, like tonight's Dharma talk, you think, I understand, that feels good.
Uh-huh.
And then others, I don't know what he's talking about at all.
Uh-huh. Well, so you want me to comment on that?
Yeah, I want you to comment on
that. Well, I can comment on Dogen in particular.
Yeah.
Well, Dogen is writing in the 13th century Japan, for Japanese monks in a very, very different culture than ours. So you have to kind of penetrate all that stuff. You have to have good translations. You have to read it over and over again. He's also drawing on early Buddhism without telling you what he's... So with Dogen, you just have... I've read Dogen for years and years and years and years. So he's a little more, a little harder to access than some teachers. Now, I just taught a course on Ryokan. Ryokan's not that hard to access. It's his poetry, which is, people seem to really resonate with it. So I don't know what to say other than that. I will say that, I don't know what it is. I don't know if I even answered your question or addressed your question, Duncan.
Well, I just had a good comment, huh? So that's good.
And you know, for me, I've studied all this Buddhist stuff over the years, but it's good that I studied it, but that's just like secondary or tertiary for me. It's like, the Dharma, which is embodied in the cushion and in the table here and me, that's what really is speaking when I speak. I mean, that sounds like I know something. I don't know anything. I just pay attention. That's all. So I can do that. But Tim can't do that. It just comes from practice enlightenment. That's all. So does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. But it sounds like I know something. I don't know anything. Yeah.
I can comment on that, kind of, just words that come to mind, things that have been said to me throughout.
Could you speak a little louder?
I could try. Uh-huh. It's like one thing that I've heard is that the student cannot learn. How does it go? The teacher does not decide what the student learns. The student learns what he is ready to learn. And sometimes, like, every day is new, and you wake up with a whole new set of emotions and a whole new set of sleep dreams that kind of follow through. And so every day is brand new, and there's a teacher in everybody, and each a student till the end. Mm-hmm. So then sometimes, like, whatever your day is, you're blocked to certain teachers. Mm-hmm. And then some days you need a different one. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's the beautiful thing about this place, I think, so far, is that I have not seen the same person twice sitting up there. Mm-hmm. And, like, I will connect with some and not with others, mm-hmm. but then for the ones that I might not personally connect with, I think... no teacher will say anything that doesn't mean anything to them, so I can see another side, another perspective.
Uh-huh.
And so even if I don't connect, it's a potential lesson for later, if I don't hear it today.
Hmm. Well, thank you. What's your name?
A couple pennies in there.
What's your name?
Tyler.
Pardon?
Tyler.
Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you.